Kevin Miller.
This program is about you. Standards, ethics, values, faith, family, freedom. That's what it's about here for us.
In for Kevin Miller, it's the host of Money Matters, Dave Petzo, on KIDO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM and 580 AM.
And good morning. First of all, thank you, Kevin, for trusting me with the next 3 hours. 3 hours. And to do this every single day. Wow. Wow. Kevin, you're tough. Tougher than people think. But it's an honor to be here. I want to a couple things today. First of all, I've got Steve Ackerman calling in at 6:30 today. Later on, we've got candidate Marv Hagedorn, who's running for lieutenant governor. He's going to be coming in today, and also Sylvia Hempel, who is a rock star lady who started off literally cleaning toilets and has built a phenomenal cleaning business. Literally hundreds of people all over the Pacific Northwest. Actually, I think all over the country. So really, it would be fun to visit with her as we finish up today. And right now, as far as contact information, all right, let's go with my personal email. I don't know how to use Kevin, so let's go with mine. If you want to email question in, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. dave@petsofinancial.net. P-E-T-S-O, not the sauce. And, of course, it's 580-5436 is our number here. So I want to pose a couple questions to start us off here. If we have a situation where we've got strong global growth, and we do, not as good as it should be, but definitely it's strengthening, okay? Maybe not strong. Maybe strong is not the best word for that, but strengthening. And it clearly is. All the PMI data, okay, now, and I don't want to get in the weeds, but PMI, that's a general broad measure. And whenever it's over 50, it means the economy is expanding. In every single region, from China to Europe to India, I mean, all the major regions, and now even in Latin America, with all the problems that we've had in Brazil, Argentina, Venezuela, it's spilling all over the place. And yes, the United States, the data is improving. And yet we continue to live in this land of doom and gloom. Why? I mean, it's a really interesting question. It's not that things are perfect. They're not. It's not that we're destined to this wonderful path where Obamacare obviously is going to get fixed. Didn't. That'll be fun to talk with Steve Ackerman. It's now officially done. They don't have enough votes to pass anything yet. So we have a non-perfect situation, but we are clearly expanding. And clearly, as we worry about removing the excess cash from the system, which is important to do, the Federal Reserve for a couple of years has been getting out of the way. That was supposed to be the defining thing where everything was phony. It was all a phony thing, remember? It was just this circumstance where we had, if the Federal Reserve did not inject false, basically data into the system, the market would crumble. So it was a false prop. For thousands of points, 10,000 points, we heard that. And then the Federal Reserve left. And the market kept going. Okay, so prop number one is taken away. The Federal Reserve. Artificially high asset prices. No way the market could hold up, but it does. Why? Global growth. Increased business confidence. Increased consumer confidence since the Trump election. Market responds positively, talking about positive things like tax reform, repealing Obamacare, successful or not, deregulation. Still, it's a constant talk of doom and gloom, constantly. And it's an interesting thing, too, because you have to also wonder, these folks, why are they always wrong? Okay, there are some, and there really are some, that are constantly negative. Constant negativity. You won't change their mind about anything. Why? Because they make money scaring people. It's what they do. Well, let's go to this world famous bear over here, and then they just talk about all the problems in the world. It doesn't add anything to the conversation, but it's how that person makes a living being a, quote, world famous bear. And there are people out there that literally have the doomsday website. There's people out there that are gold bugs. They're being paid by the gold bug people, okay, to push people to their website, to push people to their blogs. But if you were looking at it intellectually honest, it's always negative all the time. That's not thought. That's not good thought. That's not, I don't mean good in a positive sense. I just mean, what's the point? If all you ever do is look at something and try to figure out what's wrong, that's not helpful. Especially this as the fundamental thing. They're always wrong. Oh, they may get a market correction right. They may get a recession right. You call 10 in a row, chances are you're going to get one. And that's what they do. Every day we're on the brink of a recession. Every day we're on the brink of a market collapse. Every single day, billionaires are about to leave the market. Here's the trick that billionaires are using to avoid the coming cataclysmic whatever it is. It's constant. And then when we pass a certain deadline, because the currency is going to go away, or we've had three blood moons in a Shemitah or something weird like that. Yeah, I know. It's a best-selling book. Craziness. We get past the European crisis, part one, two, three, and four. And these people are still talking about, well, it's going to be China. Then China doesn't fold. Well, it's going to be the elections. Then the elections, we soar higher. What is it next? What is it next? Because it's always a doom and gloom thing. So I get that. There's some people there, but there's also this bias towards negativity. This bias that we have when everything has been getting better for our whole life. Now, you may not like the TV programs. You may not like the morals of the country. You may not like a lot of things. But from an economic perspective, from a healthcare perspective, longevity, from technology, making our lives easier, travel is available to the masses. All of that gets better and better our whole life. Corporate profits are at record levels, just like they were last year and the year before and the year before. Record cash flows. Business is doing well. But we have this constant feeding of what's wrong. And I want to give a couple of examples of what can go wrong when people are honestly looking at the data. But they see too small of a picture. Now, I get that federal spending has to be serious, and I want to talk about that a little bit today as well. We've got to get serious about this. Japan is dead. They just can't make it work. They can't. They're so far in debt, I just don't think they're going to make it out. We don't want to go that way. So we'll talk a little bit about that today, too. But why do we see things like this? Auto loans and student loans are a disaster. And they are. Auto loans and student loans are a disaster. And when we have that kind of a disaster, what does that look like? Is this the beginning, like you're starting to hear people talk about? This is like the subprime crisis. Is it? Is that a reasonable comparison? Is it a subprime crisis? Huh. Well, let's take a look at it. A, it's cars.
In a world where buying tires was scary and friendly service.
Well, okay. Let me see what I get rid of this, shall we? That would be the brand new computer system that we have here in this fancy studio. Decided to just play a commercial. So, anyway, that's not even on the radio. That was on the computer here. Anyway, we focus on one little thing. One tiny thing. It's cars. Cars can be repossessed. So the difference there with a car to a house where people live, and they can destroy the house, but they also take 6 months or a year to get them kicked out, even if they're not making any payments, right? A car you don't pay on. You wake up one morning and it's not in the driveway anymore. They've repossessed it. They can get it back. So the idea of cars being an indicator of a subprime crisis is data mining. They're right. There is a spike in auto loans, auto loan defaults. Huge spike. But when we draw back, and a huge spike in student loans as well. But now let's take those little pictures, and instead of focusing on those little pictures, put them in the big picture of how much debt, how much default, how much consumer debt is there in our country. Is it at escalated levels? Is it at record levels? Is it at crisis levels? And the answer is, of course, no. It's not. It's not. So you can take any picture and you can whittle it down into one little squiggle, blow it up on the screen, and scream and yell about it. They're right, but they're oh so wrong. Some intentional, of course. Some of it is intentional data mining. But not all of it. Not all of it. Some people just see it. Wow, that's a problem. That's the beginning. I'm like a detective. I'm on this new collapse faster than most. And we see that with student loans as well. But with the overall picture, consumer debt is really, really low. Really low. We're getting it right as a country. Oh, I know. The people down the street, the people across, whatever it is, they don't get it right. I get it. My kids are in trouble. I got it. But collectively, is all we care about on an economic perspective. Is there too much consumer debt in the United States of America? The answer is no. There's not. There is not. And finally, I want to touch on this real quick. The mass defaults in autos versus record FICO scores. Huh? We just hit an all-time high in FICO scores, meaning we're paying our bills on time. Isn't it okay sometimes to just go, hey, you know what? We're paying our bills on time. Isn't that amazing? But we don't. We mine around and every bit of news we see, not every bit, sorry, only over 90% of all news data points are negative. 90%. It's hard to get a clear picture. We literally have to understand what we're looking at as for data, because it's always looking for the negative. All right, we got to take a quick break. And again, our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Do ring us up and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. KIDO.
Hello and welcome, and thank you again for joining us. And thank you to Kevin, who obviously is trusting me with 3 hours. I don't know if we'll have anything left. We'll wreck this studio. We're going to tear it down. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it. I appreciate the trust. And let's go right now to Hank. Hank, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please. How do we miss Hank? Hold on, Hank. Let's see if I mess this up. How'd I do that? There we go. I got you. Put you on the wrong side.
Okay.
That's my bad.
Okay. I was going to say that the human nature is such that it's easier to be doom and gloom. And I think it's also a basic understanding of what, a misunderstanding of what wealth is. I mean, a lot of times when I hear these advertisements about buying gold for the upcoming disaster and all this, it's a misapprehension. I mean, gold is worthless if you can't exchange it for any other, like any other thing, without any other commodity. So, I mean, in itself, it's not intrinsically valuable. You can't eat it. You can't use it for most purposes. It doesn't create wealth. It's all it can do is it can be a method of a medium of exchange like any other currency or anything else we have. But
right.
Too many people don't understand exactly what real wealth is. I mean, it would pay to read Adam Smith's 1776 work, The Wealth of Nations, where he's saying it's the goods and services that are the real wealth, not gold or accumulation or mercantile policy where you have trade balances. Now, the other point I pointed out is our biggest fear is, you know, you're talking about consumer debt. In the 1890s, we had far more consumer debt by the average American citizen by a long shot, than there was a factor in the Great Depressions of the 1890s and later on in the Great Depressions of the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
1890s, 1830. Actually, in a lot of ways, the growth of the American economy has made us been able to, the bigger or faster growth, the faster we can absorb debt. I mean, both on the government and private levels, provided that growth continues. So when government, I think the biggest factor is this, when you don't contain the power of the state, You have to restrain the power of the state so that the society's economic sector can change dynamically. In other words, that you have to have the state out of it enough so that economic change can happen. Okay, the government, by its activity, hampers economic activity and hampers growth by not allowing change. Is my point.
Well, it's a very good point, Hank. I'm going to add to that just a little bit because all your points are good. I just want to tag on to that and say when you have governments that overreach, and they constantly do, all government does by nature. It's like an organism that just continues to absorb whatever is around it. It absorbs power. It centralizes power. It's automatic. It doesn't matter what the wishes of the people are. It will continue to grow unless the wishes are strong enough to vote the people out and change it. And when we have government sucking up the resources, which they do, they're not productive. Everything government does, they do poorly, everything. And so what we do is we have a circumstance where we take from the more productive side. And so therefore, by definition, the bigger government gets, the slower the economy will be, by definition.
Well, that's what's happened. I mean, you look at all what's happened to the classic socialist states. Russia, because of nearly 100 years of socialism, has an economy about the half the size of France in terms of growth of national product. If you didn't have nuclear weapons, Russia would be a non-entity in the world. In other words, because of the stagnation that socialism and large and overpowering government has done, North Korea, which is probably the most oppressive state in the world, is arguably the poorest state in the world. Look at the great nations like Great Britain, which since the beginning of socialism, socialism started in the first liberal governments in the turn of the century to the Labour Party. Look what it's done to the British economy.
Yep, absolutely.
Look at the growth that we could have had instead of having maybe average per capita income of 50,000-60,000. If we had not done some of the things that we've done, starting with the New Deal, maybe per capita income would, instead of being 50,000 or 60,000, would be 90,000, or maybe $120,000 per person. I mean, I think that you could make a computer model and show what we would have, the potential growth that's been destroyed in this country.
No doubt, no doubt. And I'm sure people could, but they don't buy into it, Hank, because it's about fairness or whatever their major issue is. I get, but your point is very well taken. If we don't have all these deals, where would the trajectory have taken us? Would it be quite remarkable when we think about Government involvement in everything is destructive. It's an amazing. If we just simply started with every program that government or a business was going to do, we started with the premise that this is a bad thing because it is going to take from the more productive and give it to something to destroy the productivity, to destroy the capital. So I think we'd make better decisions if we simply started understanding government is dysfunctional. Government wants to absorb more. Government is destructive. And so if that's the case and we start with everything, why do we want new programs? We don't. We need new solutions to those problems out there, not new government programs, which are destructive.
I totally agree. When you read the histories and they denounce, for instance, let's say John D. Rockefeller, Standard Oil, you realize that he brought the price of oil down. You know, when you look at the price per barrel in the 1860s when he started the standard, 1870 when he started Standard Oil, where practically he brought it down to where you could buy a gallon or a pint of kerosene for practically a nickel. I mean, he because of the efficiency he brought, the wealth that he created, the efficiencies he brought into the economy.
Yep.
He cheapened. He made life better for everybody else.
Everyone else as well. That's right. Hank, I gotta go. Okay.
Okay.
But thank you, sir. I appreciate the conversation. You have a great rest of the day.
Bye.
Bye now. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. I think we're going to have to take a quick break here. And when we come back, Jim, you're up to bat next. If you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. I am Dave Petso, sitting in for Kevin Miller today. He's off resting, relaxing, and spending some family time, which is awesome. Good for him. And what we've been talking about, of course, today is some of the doom and gloom out there. But right now, I want to shift over, and let's talk healthcare with Steve Ackerman. See if I can get the button pushed right. Steve, are you there?
I am. Good morning, Dave.
Terrific. Good. Good morning, Steve. Thanks again for taking the time.
Certainly. Certainly. Glad to be here.
So what happens with healthcare now? I mean, are they going to, as they say, go back to the drawing board? Do you think this is a disaster? Is this a one step in the process of fixing this? What's your take on all this mess?
Well, it's certainly been in the headlines. I think at this point, if I had to look in the crystal ball, my prediction would be that this thing is going to fail, and they are going to have to go back to the drawing board. And the drawing board here means regular order in Congress, which means going back to perhaps specific subcommittees in both the House and the Senate, and really walk this through the committee process, which is what it missed the first time. That's a very important part of lawmaking is the committee process and basically kind of build the support in the committee. So if I had to predict today, I'd predict that it's going to fail on its vote. It's being delayed, obviously, because of Senator John McCain being out. But it's shy of the necessary 50 that Mitch McConnell needs in the Senate.
Yeah. Well, they just announced that two more have fallen off. So they are not. I don't think they're going to take a vote. So,
It
looks like, and they're talking about maybe the Trump tweeted out today, I guess, that we are going to be somebody tweeted out that they are going to be hoping to repeal it and then come back later and figure it out. What do you think of that strategy? Go ahead and repeal it if you have the votes.
Well, the benefit, and I know the president's been pushing that, the benefit of that, or the positive of that, is that does meet a campaign promise. The campaign promise was we are going to repeal and replace. So that's at least the repeal part. That's kind of the upside of it. The downside is the uncertainty that's going to be thrown into the insurance markets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is not about health care. This is about healthcare insurance. And the problem is, you know, the way I've looked at this, Bill, Dave, is you've really got three parts to it. One part is Medicaid, public insurance. The other part is private, the private insurance market. And then the third is kind of the mandates, taxes, et cetera. But the bottom line is if you repeal it and don't make an argument about if you're going to do anything in the future, if you leave that uncertainty out there, the insurance companies are going to raise the premiums by a higher amount. They've already said they'll do that, several of them across the country. They'll raise them by a higher amount because what they're going to do is they're going to collect more money because they've got people mandated to get health insurance, and they're just not sure what the risk level is. So they're going to grab more money, pile it up, and wait. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then when Congress comes back next year, they don't know what Congress is going to do. So they're going to be safe, and they're going to kind of pile on money, which is going to mean higher premiums. So that's the big problem with just repealing and doing nothing.
Now, part of it, they're repealing, and then we're obviously there'll be some kind of phase in period, right, or phase out, if you will, in this case, repealing. So let's say they say over a 2-year period. Would that, in your opinion, still be just as disruptive to the insurance companies and therefore really to the overall program?
Yes.
Okay.
Because the insurance companies every year, you know, they have I mean, we know health insurance as buyers and and you know it from the employer side. So we know health insurance as buyers, and we have a window in which we go and, you know, we kind of decide what we're going to purchase, et cetera, go through it, the plans that are available, et cetera. Well, that's an annual process. So if there's an uncertainty in the future, the insurance companies are simply going to just bide their time as best they can. But essentially, the worry there is Congress will come back and do something, but we're not sure what. Mm-hmm. And that's a very nervous position for any company to be in. It's basically an uncertain market for the company. And some types of uncertainties are natural, but other types of uncertainties are uncertain or kind of artificial. They're not really known. And the problem is this one is not really known. It's an artificial uncertainty. So the insurance companies are going to weigh the risk. And the problem is they don't really know, because this bill has one fundamental flaw, and that is it doesn't have a champion in the Congress. This health reform bill, if you look at it, Dave, is really a bill that kind of gives something to everybody, enough to get them to pass it, but nobody really believes in it. That's its fundamental problem. And, you know, this goes back to making the argument the Republicans have had 7 years. You know, my argument's been they've had too many ideas, and they just haven't corralled around kind of one vision. And so you have this monstrosity of a bill, massive insurance reform. Nobody really wants to pick up the ball and run with it. They're all kind of being, if you will, paid off to accept it enough. You know, give me $45 billion in opioid crisis funding and I'll vote for it, but I really don't like it. Give me enough choice, even though I don't get all the choice I want, and I'll vote for it. I mean, nobody's really backing it. And the president is kind of distant in the sense he's not really, you know, rallying, if you will, around it. So he's kind of a non-player. And basically, it's not popular in the polls. So this thing is really, kind of a dog that ain't hunting, to be, for lack of a better way of saying it.
That's a good point. So what kind of, in your mind, what is so difficult about healthcare, other than it's, you know, 20%, it's a big deal, you've got all these constituencies. How much time, and what is the biggest, it's a great point. There is nobody in there that's fighting for a vision of what healthcare would look like. It's just this thing over here is a monstrosity. We've got to get rid of it, but we don't have any vision of where we're moving forward. What would that vision? What do you think would be a path forward?
Well, I think we need to introduce more choice, and I'm talking specifically about healthcare insurance reform. You need more choice in healthcare insurance, and I don't know if kind of getting rid of the state line argument where you can buy it across the country is necessarily the answer. I think what I could kind of think about is if I thought about choice, in healthcare insurance, my thought would be that for primary care, you need components like direct primary care, where you get rid of the third party, you lower the administrative costs. You do need the health savings accounts, which is in this bill, the doubling of that. You need that. You also need maybe a regional insurance strategy where, you know, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, kind of a Northwest, maybe get rid of some of those state lines and have it kind of be, you know, build the population, need the volume to be able to lower. You need people, individuals, to be able to buy as groups. So you need four or five kind of fundamental things regarding choice, competition, and maybe expanding the network. And I think if you did that on the insurance side, and then on the healthcare side, the actual delivery side, if we were able to lower the cost of healthcare itself, that would obviously ease the pressure on the deductibles and the premiums. And I think you could get that by just opening up the healthcare market in terms of the types of providers, you know, more delivery, different types of delivery, et cetera, kind of decentralizing the system.
Right, right. Well, good, good.
It's a big issue.
It is an enormous issue. It's 20% of our economy and growing.
Yeah.
That's a big number. We need to get this right, not get it tweaked. It needs to be gotten right. You know, it's interesting. I think you bring up a good point. Obamacare, as horrifying as it was championed by the president. I mean, he obviously pushed and pushed and pushed. And, you know, so as bad as it is, and we don't know what's in it until we pass it and all those things, which seems absurd in hindsight, of course. Well, it seemed absurd at the time.
Yeah.
But we do need a champion, and there isn't. There is no movement on this to really fix it. It's a great point. It's a great point. I think we need to take a quick break here. Steve, you going to hang on with us?
Sure.
Great. Sounds good, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel, KIDO.
Hello and good morning. Again, I am Dave Petzel sitting in for Kevin this morning. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, it's Dave at Petzel Financial, P-E-T-S-O. Not the sauce, P-E-T-S-O Financial.net. All right, let's go ahead and go back to Steve. Steve, are you there? You're still with us, aren't you?
I am, sir.
Good, good, good. Hey, let's finish up a real quick discussion here. Is there any chance for decent health care reform now that this bill is dead before we have another Congress? Now, part one. Number two, do you think this is really devastating for Republicans? Or is this a lot of noise awful early in Trump's administration?
I think second question first, I think it is going to be devastating for Republicans. The best argument they're going to make is we tried to put forward something, but if they can't get a vote, be able to bring it up, you know, for a vote, then they didn't really even take the opportunity to try to repeal and replace Obamacare, which was a campaign promise. And that is something President Trump, to his credit, has been arguing. You know, that's why he's been saying, let's just repeal it, because he's kind of thinking as a voter, right? If I was a voter, that's what I would expect, because that's what y'all ran on. So I believe it would be, it's going to be very difficult for them on other issues. That would be one. The other is, I do think you can do some things in the healthcare, you know, kind of in the legislative arena. I think the HSA component of doubling and kind of really kicking up HSAs, that could be done. I do think there's some Medicaid reform that could be done, but that's going to involve working very closely with the governors, who, again, was another group who was not kind of brought into the process, yet they're really the big decision makers in a lot of this. So I think you can do those two things and really focus on it. But again, you've got to deal with the cost of healthcare itself.
Right, right. Good, good. All right, let's shift a little bit here because of your political background. Let's talk a little bit about Trump. And is he really, let me phrase it this way, is he really this low in the polls? Or, as we've discovered, polls are, they're fairly made up. I mean, I'm not saying that they lie about the numbers, but you certainly call certain people. You certainly ask questions in certain ways, and you get the results that you're trying to get. Do you feel that Trump is lost or is really this low in the polls that they continue to claim? Do you think that that's true?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he's that low. I think part of his problem is he is he's a bit scattered. He's doing a lot, but you have to really dig around and find out. Removing federal regulations or whatever, you know, whatever the agenda, it does get kind of lost. And part of that, you know, some would blame strictly the media and kind of take on the media side and say they're purely, you know, kind of pounding on the issue. That's what journalists do. So that should not be a surprise by anybody. On the other side, where I think the administration is failing is in laying out its vision and laying out kind of the messages to back up that vision and to hammer on that side. You know, it's like they're battling the media, and that's fine. There's always a certain amount of that. And that, you know, the president, his people should be out there battling with the media. But then the next step is, and by the way, here's what we're doing. And you don't get enough of that. Mm. And so I think that's part of the problem is they basically have kind of a little bit of a messaging and communications kind of lacking a strategy, you know, and they need to just push their agenda and say, here's our agenda. Here's what I ran on. Here's how I'm fulfilling it and going after that.
Right. You guys are over here worrying about this while we're going to go and go about business over here.
Right. Or even as the Russia issue, whatever is going on, the agenda is still going. You know, if you go back and look at the press conferences that President Nixon had, he continued to push the agenda every time he gave a press conference, and he gave a lot of them. That's something the president needs to think about. President Nixon gave a lot of press conferences. He kept bringing up his agenda over and over. In the middle of questions about Watergate, his agenda kept getting brought up. The clips we see historically don't talk about that, but if you watch the whole thing, he's hammering his agenda over and over again. So people are still hearing, yeah, but at least he's getting done what he said he would. Mm. And, you know, Trump has done some things based upon what he ran on. And, you know, but yet there's nobody in the administration really touting it, you know, as clearly as they should.
Right. Oh, excellent point. Excellent point. Now, do you a little bit of a same lines? Do you feel like after some time, and I would have thought by now, so I'm wrong already, after some period of time that the media's unreal bias, and it is unreal. I mean, it's what 93% of everything that's reported on mainstream media is negative towards Trump. That's off the charts. That's just ludicrous. So, yes, they are incredibly biased. There's nobody that thinks that they're not. Will this change? Will people get tired of the nonstop beating? For example, Russia, it obviously, again, not running all the way with Russia, but just in general, right? It's Hillary Clinton's foundation taking $20 million and giving away 20% of the uranium. You know, things like this that are obvious collusion problems. There isn't any that anybody can find, but they keep digging without going back towards the Democrats. Will people get tired of that and stop listening?
Well, if that's all they report, and they don't report any substance, then yes, I think people will continue to be turned off. And I think we've seen that. I think the fact that, you know, kind of over time, the fact that people have gone to alternative sources for their news speaks to that. So the media clearly does have some bias problems. Dave, they have some problems in other areas, and maybe it's just a pet peeve of mine, but when you have a journalist writing an article in a newspaper, and then I see them on television talking about it, that's kind of that's a little more celebrityness that I don't think should necessarily be given to a journalist, and that might feed on that bias a little bit. You know, that might feed on the idea, wow, that gets me on television, and that's kind of an intoxicating thing, you know, in and of itself. So I think there's a lot of things the media could do to kind of reform themselves. Having said that, though, you know, if there's a problem in politics, if there's something wrong like this that has happened with Russia, the best thing to do is get all the information out immediately instead of stalling. And the problem is the administration is stalling and their lawyer, you know, they're getting lawyers and, you know, and that doesn't look good either. So the best kind of antidote to that is get it out, right? Do it like President Reagan did with Iran-Contra. Get everything out, go on television and say, this is what I thought, but this is reality. I was wrong. My fault. You know, and have an internal investigation, very high profile, get it out. And get it out right away and get it behind you. And now, they're not doing that.
It seemed that they were doing that, though, Steve, with the didn't they come out right away and with the Comey thing and use Mueller, immediately? That was not waiting for the pressure from the Democrats to do it. They just did it.
Yes, and that's a great point. They did in the beginning. And then the problem is then this meeting, you know, with Donald Trump Jr., Kushner, Paul Manafort, I mean, actual campaign people involved in that meeting, that should have all come out at that time. But, yes, they started to. That's a good point. They started to, but they should have just laid everything out.
Right.
And, you know, if you lay everything out, you can then turn around and say, and yet the Clinton Foundation, and yet, you know, you can kind of turn around and make your argument because you could say, okay, let's lay it out. And because, you know, Trump ran on that. He ran on, you know, I'm not perfect, but look at what you've had. That was some of his argument. And people said, well, you know, that's true. I mean, he may not be perfect, but he's at least saying some things that I believe in. And
right.
He is standing up for some things that I believe in. And guess what? There is corruption here. He's showing up to this. He didn't create that corruption.
Right.
So in a way, he's got a pretty clean slate. He's a pretty independent player. He actually could do quite a bit. He's got quite a bully pulpit there.
He really does. It's true. Steve Ackerman, thank you so much for taking time from your busy macroeconomics at NNU. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. You bet, Dave. Thank you.
Have a great rest of the day, Steve, and we'll talk again soon, I hope.
You bet. Take care.
Bye now. All right, you hear the music. We are floating on out of here. Hour number one is done. Back after the news at the top of the hour. And Jim, finally, waiting forever, we'll get you on air soon.
This is Callie Zamzo, and you might think that just because my dad is Jim Zamzo, the Valley's lawn, garden, and pet expert, that I'd have a perfect lawn. And I usually do. But being a busy mom who works full-time, I'm subject to the same time limitations as everyone else, and sometimes forget to do something. What I do then is to take in a 12-inch turf sample to my nearest Zamzos, showing where the good lawn turns to bad. Not only do they tell me what's going on with my lawn, but also how to speed up its recovery by applying Zamzos Thrive. According to Dad, Thrive restores depleted nutrients to the soil and greens up brown spots fast. Of course, if my lawn did have fungus, bill bugs, or chinch bugs, they would have caught that too and suggested a cure. They also reminded me to raise the height of my lawnmower and bump up my water schedule to 3 times a week. Dad says this excessive heat is hard on everything, but you can't go wrong applying Thrive anywhere you see stress in your lawn and garden. And to all the hardworking moms, dads, grandmas, and grandpas of the Treasure Valley, have a great summer from all of us at Zamzos.
This.
Hello and welcome, and thanks again for joining us, and thanks again to Kevin for letting me hopefully take care of his program and not let it crumble around as he's enjoying his family. So good for him. You know, again, this is an opportunity for me after, I mean, just being around this valley and for 35 years and doing radio for over 30. It's just, it's a fun thing, and I appreciate everybody giving me opportunity to do that. Thanks again to Marv Hagedorn. I don't know about you, but I could have just talked forever about people that have experience in the legislature and why, just, you know, just generally, why are you running? I really admire people that do that when they do it for the right reasons. I mean, obviously, they all proclaim to do it for the right reasons, but, you know, Marv's a genuine guy, and running for lieutenant governor is not, you know, certainly isn't a crown jewel of great jobs out there. But I like the way, I like the direction of helping pull different parts of government together. It's a neat thing. So thanks again, Marv. And let's go ahead and go to the phones now. By the way, our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And let's go to Patriot Ray. Ray, thanks for calling.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, sir.
You know, I think a lot of those that go into public service go in initially with the right idea and trying to do the right thing. But once they're there for a little while, they become, I think, corrupted. And then they just become more concerned about being reelected, telling whatever lie they need to the people so they'll believe them for the next term,
mm-hmm.
and then just continue on with what they're doing. What we really need is really true statesmen. And we have a few. We have some that really try to do the right thing, but they just keep getting beaten down by those who've been in forever.
Yes.
And need to be out.
Well, and so that of course, is... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that, of course, is part of the problem of the swamp in D.C. and how people get entrenched there. I think it's less of a problem in, quotes, Idaho's legislature, in the sense that they're not wined and dined, and they aren't, you know, by being in the Idaho legislature does not now make you a wealthy person, right? And it does in D.C. Apparently,
the
there's enough going on that they all get rich, weirdly.
How can you go into the service of the people, dead broke, supposedly, and then come out multimillionaires? That's
correct.
Ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, and there obviously that doesn't happen on a legislative level in Idaho. So I realize that that's a different scale, but I appreciate what you're saying. It is, there's no question that the system is corrupting, is corruptible.
So do you recall Atwell Perry, who served in the Senate for many years here?
Oh, what was the name again?
Atwell Perry was on.
No.
Atwell Perry. He was on the JFAC committee, a really good friend. He was one that just really served the people and always looked out for the people. He never took anything. I mean, they'd go to parties and they. One time he was approached by a really young woman who was beautiful and kind of approached him. And he said, "You're not coming to talk to me about things that I need to. You're trying to entrap," because he was not what you would consider a real handsome man, although he was a wonderful man.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said a lot of corruption goes on even here. It does happen. It's not as widespread, I do not believe, but we are seeing more and more things, even within our own state, that we accept as the norm. Like the LGBTQXYZ community,
mm-hmm.
where they just want to take over and they don't take no for an answer. They just keep coming back until they get what they want, and then we cave. So
right.
We're losing our marriage situation. We're losing our moral values. And then we've got people in Congress who don't even see that, because now we're giving people in prison sex changes. What is with that? They're in prison to be punished, not to get what they want.
I know. I think you should throw the rock through a window. Because getting somebody to pay for a sex change operation or having to do it yourself, then you just you throw a rock through a window, steal some stuff, go into the penitentiary, and you get the job done. This does not sound like a good idea.
And when you get into the health situation, I'm sorry, the system cannot take care of everybody. It just cannot physically do it. It cannot economically do it. I'm just an old high school educated guy and had a couple of really short semesters of college, and I'm not that educated, but I can see the financial situation we're in,
mm-hmm.
and we're so far in debt, this hole to get dug out is really going to take some commitment from people who really want to serve. And that's what we're praying for all the time, and we're hoping that Trump will do what he said he did, that is drain the swamp, take care of the situation on our borders,
yep.
but having illegals come in. But now we've got a new H-2B visas coming through. Another, I think they said 16,000
mm-hmm.
more versus the 50-some thousand we already have.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's crazy. We cannot economically keep doing everything for everybody. But, Dave, you're doing a good job. Thank you for stepping in for Kevin.
Well, thank
we
you.
We love Kevin, but we also love you. You do a good job.
Thanks, Ray. I appreciate it very much.
Birthday.
You guys, you have a great rest of the day. I appreciate your phone call today. Thanks.
I will. Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. God bless. You know, Patriot Ray, well, you've been around a long time, long, long time. Remember seeing him on Saturdays when Kevin first came here. So, great. Thanks for calling in. And our number is 580-543-6580-KIDO. Again, you know, I started today talking about all the doom and gloom, right? There's just so much of it out there. And there is. But there are enormous amounts of positive stories out there. But what we do and what media does, and this is why I call this financial pornography, okay? Not to be vulgar. Follow my thought. When we are talking about gentlemen out there and you say, okay, I don't view pornography. I don't. But you know what? It's hard not to. So you see an attractive woman walking down the street. Hard not to look. Hard not to check her out. It simply is. I'm not saying you have to or that you automatically go there and start playing with it, but everybody sees it. It's no different when we hear constant doom and gloom reports. The end is here with Europe. The end is here with Europe Part 2. Greece is going to take it down with the contagion and the pigs nations. And it just goes on and on and on and on. And so even now, when we have changed the trajectory, in November, we changed the trajectory of government. It doesn't mean it's all going to take effect. It doesn't mean that in 4 years, we're going to go right back. It doesn't mean that we're going to be stalemated if Congress turns over. But to act like nothing happened or it's just the market, the stock market, reacts by itself. And therefore, it's at a certain P.E. ratio or the Shiller index or this or that. And all of these other things are wrong. It's exactly my point is this is financial pornography. You can't dial it off. You can't stop looking. You can't stop wondering when somebody gets on TV if they aren't right about the coming doom and gloom. You can't turn it down. You can't stop looking, listening. It is so important for us to dial it back. To simply go on and go, oh, that's the same doomsday guy for 10,000 points. Don't care. Push the button, mute button, off. We've got to be careful of the inputs because it's hard not to look. So don't. So when people go in there and you're on the blogs and you're in there, you're in the Gold Bug Digest. Oh, I'm not in the Gold Bug Digest. I'm in the negative hedge thing over here or whatever it is. I'm not over here. I'm not a gold bug. It's all doom and gloom. When 90% of the stories are all about this, when 90% of the ads are all about selling you on the end of the world, on an equity indexed annuity, some kind of product to scare you, stay out of the Wall Street casino. The billionaires are all moving their money here or there. And by the way, you should own silver. You need to own gold. It's the only real store of value, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm talking about. And they know who you are. You can't stop looking. You want more and more financial pornography. So they pour it on. They sell your name. The cookies know where you are. What are the cookies? You know what I mean? The computer cookies? The algorithms. They know who you are. You dig that stuff. So even when you go out there to a general website, what do you see? More scare ads. Because that's what you feed on. It's what you feed on. It's hard not to look. So the most important thing you can do is just dial it back and don't look. Stop it. Okay, one of my favorite little bits, right? Okay, in the whole wide world, okay? Is Bob Newhart, favorite guy. And he does this bit. You should YouTube it if you've never seen it. You need to. In fact, I do it periodically to remind myself. So he plays his part, which is a psychologist. This lady comes in. Now, it's a whole funny bit, but the point is she keeps saying, I have inappropriate relationships with men. I'm afraid of being in a box. I'm afraid of being in my house. She's afraid of everything. And everything she comes up with, he says, stop it. Well, that's your advice? Yeah, stop it. Well, my mom, we don't even go there. Stop it. Stop it. It's constantly. So when you're stuck in this and you can't stop looking, you can't stop figuring out how your net worth is the most important thing in the world, how not your future development. And all we're worried about is the next market taking down. And every day you punch on and see what your net worth is because it's that easy. Why do you do that when what you're trying to do is produce, maybe we're trying to do, is produce a 20 or 30 year increasing income, cost of living adjusted, that you can't outlive? Maybe that's what you're trying to do in retirement. But we focus on day-to-day fluctuations and why the market moves 0.1%. Stupid. It is. And it takes us further from the truth. It causes discomfort. It's a bad idea. Dial it down. Super important. Super important. If we can't dial it back, we can't find peace. If we can't dial it back, we can't invest correctly. All we ever see is doom and gloom around every corner, and we can't recognize one of the greatest bull markets in history I missed because I won't stop behaving this way. I won't stop it. I can't. I'm compelled to look, and I won't learn from past mistakes. Got to dial it back. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO, dave@petzofinancial.net. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. And, of course, I am Dave Petzo sitting in for Kevin Miller. If you're new to the program today, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it. Wow, we're coming down here to our last half hour or so. How about that? Here in a few minutes, we're going to be talking with a remarkable lady who started her career, if you will, her business, literally cleaning toilets herself, and has built that into a multi-state, hundreds of employees business. And I'm anxious because I like to talk about successful entrepreneurs because they are it. They are the whole thing. It's not the bureaucrats. It's not the politicians. It's not. It's the forgotten men and women out there that are living their dream, living their life, trying to make it happen out there. And they are making it happen. They're the people that employ everybody. They're the people that care about their clients, their customers. They are the ones that are making it all happen, not the politicians, the power brokers. They don't do anything. They destroy productivity. And they're not all bad people. They're not all bad people. I get that. And I really believe they're not all bad people. But the system is corrupt. And what happens is when we get and free people to go pursue their own goals, their own objectives, their own selfish interest, it's the invisible hand. That's the reality that we don't teach our kids anymore. We don't teach them economics anymore. We teach them touchy-feely crap. Stuff, excuse me. It's all touchy-feely. Everybody gets a trophy. Everybody is a winner. Everybody is this and this. And look, I've got grandkids. And they're all winners in my eyes, too. and it's all touchy-feely stuff. But that's not the way the world works. Businessmen are out there. They can be friends, but in the end, they're on the field trying to kill each other. And we benefit from that. We benefit from prices being better. We benefit from competition. We benefit from all that as a society. And politicians are great. Academics are even better, that have never actually done anything. They live off of other people's tax dollars. Great. They don't get that you are out there and producing, employing, and you care. And that's where innovation and creation comes from. And the freer we are, the more we can expand that. So I'm looking forward to it. I didn't mean to go all the way into that. But I love entrepreneurs. Don't you? And if you don't, think about it. Because they are the killers of the world. They create everything. Everything that's beautiful. Everything. When they're free to pursue their dreams. It's awesome. So we'll talk a little bit about that upcoming. As kind of finishing the thoughts on the market here and what's going on, you know, it's one of those things where you realize how doom and gloom this is. How people are so caught up in a squiggle here and a squiggle there. I want to leave you with just a kind of a story, if you will. When I started in this business ages ago, literally I was 18 when I got a license. 19, basically, okay? So you only ate what you killed. Nobody would give me a job, not today. So you ate what you killed, what you sold. And so it's pretty gruesome. It's pretty hard. And it was early 80s. And early 80s, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was still coming off the 70s, and interest rates peaked at 21.5%. 21.5 prime lending rate. There's not a lot of good going on. We forget as we think about how bad times are now. 21.5. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was at 840 on its way down to 750, where it bottomed. Today, we are at 21,000 plus. 21,000. Now, through that period, we've had two massive sell-offs. 50% corrections. We've had stock market crashes. We've had everything to worry about from Asian flu to the bird flu. Because that was going to kill everything. We had long-term capital go down. What's long-term capital? I know. Who cares? That was a crisis past. But, oh, it was a crisis at the time. We had the Soviet Union implode. We had Y2K. Remember that one? All the sirens on the radio running and everybody's supposed to hunker down. The planes won't fly. The boats won't float. And remember the Chinese and the Russians? They weren't even going to do anything about it. Nothing. And so, of course, now they're going to just, like, the computer systems will lob missiles at each other. So you better sell everything and buy gold. During that time, the Dow Jones Industrial Average goes over 21,000 from 750. Nothing comes close to that. But we still argue about every little hiccup, everything. And we got to go buy gold. Gold at that time was at $800 an ounce. $800. Now, just for easy numbers, let's pretend it's all the way up to $1,200 today. What does gold do? Nothing. What kind of dividends does it pay? Nothing. What does it produce? Nothing. How can it become more productive? It can't, unless you produce it on the ring of a girlfriend, then that might produce some nice feelings towards you. Productivity it doesn't have. It doesn't yield anything. It doesn't do anything. At least dirt, you can grow something. It's a pretty rock. And we spend unreal amounts of energy talking about it. And so I want to leave this thought. When we put money into stocks, this mysterious, weird thing called the market, that has gone up 10% per year for your entire life. Overthink it. Do whatever you want. Sit around and read the doomsday websites. But 10% a year for 30 years, 50 years, 83 years. Maybe you're 100 years old today. I don't care. That's what your rate of return has been. 10. It's like a gravitational pull to 10. Nobody's able to time it. There's no market timing hall of fame. So you will have periodic corrections, just like you do in everything else. But since we price it every day, you are free to behave like a psychopath. Not psychopath, just psychotic. Behave psychotically. Sell every day. You can buy every day. You can run around with your hair on fire. Proclaim the market's going to crash. Do whatever you want. It's your money. It's your money. But understand that all this financial reporting is nonsense. I'll take 750 on the Dow to 21,000 every 35 years. That's crazy. It's insane how good it's been. In spite of constant talk of doom and gloom, in spite of idiot politicians, it works. And you know what? It worked 50 years ago, too. It's called creative destruction. It works. If you actually invest in businesses and see the market correctly, that's what you get. You get an incredible investment that they don't even want your help. You can't show up and shovel the sidewalk for Procter & Gamble. You can't. They don't want you there. You're not allowed. But they'll just send you dividends. And by the way, they've increased them for 70 years in a row. Make it a game. Act like a psychopath. Go ahead. Be psychotic. Ruin it. But the simplicity of it is for $100 a month, you start and you don't stop. And you're rich. That's it. Sorry, I know we should write a giant book about all the mysteries of the great market gyrations, but you don't have to. Put money away early and often and don't sell out. Sylvia Hempel is next. We will visit about a tremendous entrepreneur. Our number here is 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo, KIDO.
Hello and welcome. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe we've been at this for 2.5 hours. We're in our final stretch. One furlong to go, I guess, is what they would say, right? Isn't that about a sixth of a mile? I think it's an eighth of a mile, furlong is. I'm trying to remember my horse track days. Anyway, I wanted to, again, thank you and thank Kevin Miller for listening over the past and giving me opportunity to do this. I've done it a couple times now for Kevin, and it's a challenge. And I'm telling you, you do this for 3 hours every day, that's tough. That is tough, tough work. So we tease Kevin about, as I did yesterday, about his dad saying it's not really a job to sit and talk into a microphone for a few hours a day. Yeah, it's not backbreaking work, but it's interesting. It's interesting, to say the least, to come up with stuff every day. Hey, I'm here with a good friend of mine and a wonderful lady, amazing entrepreneur, Sylvia Hempel. And she has started, I'm just going to say, you've started basically cleaning toilets on your own.
I did indeed. Good morning, Dave.
Good
Thanks
morning.
For having me.
Yes, yes. I'm glad to have you. And you now have hundreds of employees in multiple states.
Yep, we are close to almost 400 employees. We cover 4 states, Idaho being our primary market, also in Washington, Oregon, and Utah. So I started Clearview Cleaning Services 22 years ago. Mm-hmm. And really out of a necessity, it was a need. I was getting divorced and had some small children at home. Didn't have an income because I had been a stay-at-home mom. I had given up my career, my primary career, and found myself in a position where I needed to make some income. Mm-hmm. And it was a really challenging and interesting time in my life because there were lots of different avenues that I could have taken, but I couldn't go back to what my career had been previously, which I was an air traffic controller. Mm-hmm. And having left that field and being gone for more than 10 years, I couldn't get back into it.
Gotcha.
So I had to come up with something quickly that generated income. And I sat down and thought about it. And I thought, well, what about daycare? I could just bring in children and have daycare here at the home. And so I started doing just different things to start supplementing. But I started cleaning people's homes, mm-hmm. which led into cleaning their businesses. People would say, gosh, you're doing such a good job for us cleaning our home. What do you think about coming and cleaning our office space? And then we landed one of our first major accounts, which was the Idaho National Guard.
Wow.
They were with us for 15 years. Big shout out to all my friends at the Guard because I love them. And yeah, we just took off from there.
It's interesting. There's always a big break in there, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I was really fortunate, I have to say, too. Well, on two aspects. One, I really, really had a hard work ethic. And I'll tell you, it was tough because I had these two little guys at home. My daughter was just leaving for college. And I really had no income base. And so, you know, when you're in that position, and all I kept thinking about at that point in time was, I don't want to lose my home. Mm-hmm. I want to keep my kids stable. So I would work at night cleaning.
Right.
And my son still remembers, which is interesting, you know, they were 3 and 5. And my one I would, you know, bring with me sometimes, which now that's a big no-no. No one's allowed to have their children inside buildings. But I would bring him, and he still remembers that as, you know, he was this 5-year-old guy. And I'd be like, okay, you run this vacuum.
Yeah.
And my kids help. My daughter would come home from college in summers and help. And now here we are 22 years later with the largest independently owned company in Idaho, janitorial company in
Idaho.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. Wow. Out of necessity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And opportunity.
Yeah, and a lot of hard work.
Of course.
I always tell, you know, one of the interesting things that I always find is that now people will come up to me and they'll say, gosh, you are so lucky. Look at how far you've come. How lucky you are. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends once said to me, he said, you know, the next time you hear that, tell them, and the harder I work, the luckier I seem to get.
Right.
So I always really let people know that, you know, being an entrepreneur and having your own company, there's pluses and minuses, but in those beginning stages, it's really a lot of work. I mean, it's 80-hour work weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was probably working for 50 cents an hour. I would take any job that came my way because I needed to have that income and I wanted to support my family.
Yeah. And if you're not willing to do that, you just have no chance.
Yeah. I think that it's, you know, really starting a business, you've got to have a plan. And I have to say, in the beginning, I really didn't have a plan other than the plan was need. But I would tell people now, you know, if it's something, and it's interesting to me, too, because one of the other things I hear people often say is, do something that you're really passionate about. And I always say, well, I got to tell you, I'm really not very passionate about cleaning toilets. So I always caveat that not with do something that you're really passionate about, but do what you're doing with passion. Because quite frankly, if someone would have talked to me 22 years ago and said, wow, you were an air traffic controller with a degree in aviation management, and now you're a cleaning lady. And really for many years, people referred to me as the cleaning lady or the cleaning girl. And, you know, it was great and it was fun and it was fine. But I did the job with passion. And so even though it wasn't something I set out to do or what I wanted to be, I always tell people, it doesn't really matter where you are at that moment, but do what you're doing with passion.
Right.
And I think that's really the key to success, because sometimes we don't get to do what we really want to do in life. I really wanted to be a pilot. Think about how many people want to be a famous sports personality or a basketball player or maybe football or baseball. And that's not what we turn out to be.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be Kelly Ripa, and I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But I've taken on what I do, and I've done it with a passion. And I believe that that's where success really comes.
That's well said. Well said. So as you built this business, obviously it changes. There's changes. You took on the National Guard. That means you had to hire a lot of people. So how do you find good people? I mean, this is an industry you're in, an industry that, frankly, the janitor that does our building doesn't speak much English. So communication can be an issue. And obviously longevity at the job. You're in a high turnover industry. How do you focus on them? How do you keep people in those key positions? Because the building needs to be cleaned tonight, whether somebody shows up or not.
Yeah, and, you know, it's become increasingly more difficult because labor and finding that labor due to wages and things, benefits that people offer, have become more difficult. When I first hired my first employee, and I love telling this story, and to those of you out there listening, if you've heard this before, I apologize, but I love telling this story. The first gal that I ever hired, they still work for me today, her and her husband. I love them to pieces. And she was a refugee from Bosnia that had come to Boise. Boise has a very large population of Bosnians and Serbians and Croatians. And she came and applied. I put a little ad in the paper and said I needed a cleaner. And she didn't speak a word of English. I didn't speak a word of Bosnian. And she just kept saying, I clean, I clean. I said, yes, I get that. But I'm trying to convey to her the hours and when I need to meet her and where she's supposed to show up. And finally, we get to this point where she says, I was in Germany and I speak German. And German was my first language. And so the first employee I ever hired, we connected through German. But since then, you know, we have a really interesting policy. And one of those policies is that we treat our employees like we treat our clients. When you come to work for someone, it isn't always about the money or the bottom line. It's how you're treated. And to me, everyone that comes to work for us is treated with the utmost of respect, because what they do every night is a really difficult task. And I know that from experience, because I did it for 15 years. I personally cleaned, I've waxed floors, I've scrubbed. The whole barrier with the language is also a very interesting one. And the way we've taken that on is, unless you can speak English or are at least proficient enough to be able to converse with our client, we pair you up with someone that is, so that way they're always working in pairs, because I do believe that it's very important for us to be able to communicate. We also offer English courses if they would like to take them, or if they want to have a computer class, we're more than happy to pay for that to be able to further them along.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the really great thing is, and you talk about turnover, and yes, we do have that, but we have such longevity. In fact, we do a mandatory summer meeting every year where everybody comes, and then we do a big barbecue at the park after. And we have about 150 to 200 of our employees come in from, you know, Idaho, that drive in, you know, from all over to come to this. And we always have people stand up. How long have you been with us? And so it is incredible how many people have been with us 5 years or more.
Mm.
We have such great longevity, but we do a lot of things different than so many of the companies. We really cater the job to fit the employee, because to me, it has to be a win-win for everyone. So if they live in Caldwell or Nampa, we don't place them in Boise. We place them in Caldwell or Nampa. If they're looking for two or three nights a week, well, we don't give them a five-night-a-week job. We give them a two- or three-night-a-week client. So it becomes this really great fit. And we empower them to take ownership of the space that they're cleaning. Mm-hmm. And we let them know how important it is, what they're doing, because I don't think people understand sometimes our industry. And oftentimes I come up with clients that are looking for these discounts, or they want to have, you know, services decreased. But you think about it, when you go to work, that is the second most important place that you ever go to other than your home. You right. spend more time at work, most people do, than they, you know, other than their home life. And so imagine that environment not being clean.
Right. You're right.
Right? No, who wants to go into an office space that's dirty or that hasn't been taken care of? And, of course, I'm a little OCD on that end, so that kind of helps. But, you know, it's really an important job that we do, and we convey that to our staff. We let them know what you do is really so important. And so I think they take real pride in what they do every night. I know I did. Even when I was cleaning buildings, I really took pride in making sure that that space was taken care of.
That's nice. That's good. One of the reasons you're very good at it.
Yeah.
Do your job passionately.
Yes.
All right. More with Sylvia here upcoming. We're going to take our final break. If you have any comments or questions, hey, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Hello and welcome once again, of course, if you're just tuning in. And I'm Dave Petzo sitting in for Kevin Miller today. Thanks again for joining us. Thanks again to Kevin, and I hope he's enjoying his family today. I'm joined by a longtime friend. Although, you know, didn't see you for a while. Gap in there from once in a while.
A longtime friend also makes me seem like I'm really old, Dave.
Well,
so
hey,
I
kid,
mean,
we're getting there.
You know.
You just don't show it like I show it.
I'm going to say speak for yourself, okay?
But it's great to have you in, Sylvia. Sylvia Hempel is a very successful entrepreneur, 400-plus employees.
Close to that,
yeah. In four states, Idaho predominantly. Started off as a cleaning lady. Good for you. Amazing. Now, let's talk about some of the harder aspects, because let me preface it this way. I got a piece of advice from a now deceased very good friend. But he said, you know, as I branched off on my own a few years back, he said, Dave, you got to be really aware of this. If you want to be big, you can be big. But it will consume all of your time, and you probably will not make very much money. You can spend it all in infrastructure and not really be doing very well. If you stay small, stay smart, and keep your margins up, you'll do very well. It was an incredible piece of advice for me. How do you manage going from 25 to 50 people to 400? That's a big, this is a monumental problem to stay profitable, stay growing. How do you do it?
Well, that's a great question, Dave. And I think part of that really, and I hear what you're saying. So I think, again, you've got to really decide, if you're a business owner out there that's listening, where do you want to be? And I've seen a lot of business owners that absolutely their entire time, 100%, is consumed by the job. And for me, I've got to tell you, like, that was something that's always been a big playing factor for me. In the beginning, for me, it was, this company was built out of necessity. The most important thing to me was, and still is, my children. And they're grown now. But while they were young, I didn't need to be this big company. What I needed was to make income to support my children. And that was really the driving force. So up until about 2010, we only had 50 employees. In 2010, we won the Small Business of the Year award. The Chamber of Commerce gave us that. And boy, I got to put a plug in for them, because I love that organization. And they really are an amazing organization. If you're a small business, it's where you should be. Mm-hmm. But they gave us that award, and it kind of put us on the map. But at the same time, what happened was my kids were growing up, and they were able to drive, so they could get themselves to baseball. They could get themselves to football. And I didn't need to be there as much. And so I thought, okay, and we had clients that were continually asking us to come and service their buildings, referrals. Oddly enough, we haven't done a lot of advertising. It's really been a client referral that has really taken us, and even into these other states, it's our clients that have said, gosh, we love what you do here. Would you be willing to open up Washington, Oregon? So I think, again, you've got to really take, and I had to take a step back and say, okay, where do I want to go? And how much of my life do I want consumed by running a business? So the key to that, in my opinion, is you've got to grow smart. You have to have systems in place that keep you organized, so that those systems will work whether you have 50 employees, whether you have 100 employees. Now, that's not to say that things don't change, because I got to tell you, we are constantly making changes, or we're constantly reevaluating and saying, oh my gosh, we did it this way, but if we did this and implemented this other system, think about how much more organized and efficient we'd be. So it's always working smarter and not harder. So when the growth comes in, we also make sure that it's really managed growth. I mean, even today, we are growing leaps and bounds, and we've just picked up some great new clients and big accounts. And even then, I will say to clients that are coming on board, hey, guess what? You know what? I can't pick you up in August because we're picking up two other accounts, and I want to make sure it's right for you. Mm. I've got to put you back till September. I think the worst thing that anyone can really do in business, and this is whether you're small or large, is to overpromise and underdeliver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're making promises out there that you can't keep, to me, nothing kills a business faster, because who wants to do business with someone that is putting out a bunch of promises and then they're not delivering? And so the key for me is that as big as we get and as we're growing, that even our smaller clients, whether you're small or whether you're large, that everyone gets that same service and that same attention. So we've put in systems. I have got the most amazing staff. And again, it really does boil down to when you start hiring employees, surrounding yourself with people that are passionate about what they're doing and passionate about the company. The people that I have working for me on every level are amazing. And I also believe, though, that that leadership comes from the top. I think that, you know, I really work hard to be a good leader and to be supportive and to do anything I can to help them. So I think that that growth has to be managed. I think going back to your question, Dave, like how do you go from 50 to 100 to 500 without it consuming your life, is you have to make decisions and choices. We could actually be much larger than we are. In fact, my kids are always like, Mom, why don't you go international? Why don't you like branch out and just cover all 50 states? In fact, why don't you go global? And I'm going, well, because my golf game's already really bad and that would just make it worse. So it's a balance for me. I love what I do. I love working hard. I love playing hard. And so, you know, right now we're in a place where I'm able to do that. How much bigger do we want to get? Well, I think, again, it just depends on that managed growth and me still being able to have my balanced lifestyle. So I think that's an individual choice. Some people really like to work that hard. They want to put in 100 hours. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. And then in the beginning, that is really where you have to be.
Yeah.
And then as you ultimately start to grow, you have to say, well, where do I want? You know, set yourself goals. I write goals down every single quarter. And those goals change too. I'll reevaluate them and say, well, gosh, this is what I thought I wanted, but now I really kind of want to be in this place. So I'm a big believer in writing down my goals, setting them, then looking at them, reevaluating them, and then moving that forward.
You know, it's so funny. It's one of those things I remember back in the day. I was right. We had to put down production goals and everything week to week, right? Worked so well, I quit doing it.
You stopped writing down your goals?
Absolutely, right.
Now you don't need to anymore.
Every time somebody talks about goal setting, I think about how important that was in my early going, and yet it was a... you know, it's something you easily fall away from as success happens.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting you still do that.
I do.
Key,
absolutely.
Key, key.
Yep.
Sylvia, thank you so much. It's so
absolutely
wonderful to have you here today.
Yeah, Dave, I appreciate it. And, you know, the one bit of advice I'd give to those that are looking at...
As a doctor, I see patients every day who are losing their vision and independence to age-related macular degeneration, also known as AMD. It's the leading cause of blindness in adults 55 and older. Some of us are at greater risk for AMD. If you have blurry vision or blind spots, they can be symptoms of AMD. If left untreated, it can lead to blindness. The good news? With early detection, AMD can be managed with effective clinically approved treatments that can reduce or even reverse some vision loss. Learning that you have AMD can be scary, but there's hope and help. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is researching and developing treatments and cures for AMD. To get your free AMD information packet, contact the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS. That's 1-800-BLINDNESS. Join the fight against AMD, because together there is a cure in sight.